The host has arrived.
Why is it turn it on and it's acting weird?
They're showing in there.
Oh, there you are.
There, I think it's back.
Hey, Nicole, I think Nicole's joining us. Nicole, it says you're muted.
I'm here. How are you guys?
Hi. Good. So, Bethany's not with us.
Right, are you in Juneau or someplace down?
I'm someplace else.
Good.
Okay, I'm just informed by Elliott teleconference that we're live. For members of the public who might be listening in, we're standing by for another board member or two to call in, and then we'll get started. Bethany, are you with us?
I am, yes. I apologize. I've got really bad internet, so I'm not going to be able to come on video because every time I do, it just drops my call. So.
Okay, well, I'm glad you could join us by audio.
I apologize. I keep getting bad connectivity messages here.
All right.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order, and I would ask Peter to establish that we have a...
Melanie Bonkey?
I'm here.
Nicole Bromeo?
Here.
Bud Simpson?
Here.
Bethany Markham?
Present.
And Chairman John Binkley?
I'm here. Okay, we have before us an agenda that was sent out to everybody. I hope everybody has had that and had a chance to look through it. And if there's no changes or suggested changes to the agenda, I would look for a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
This is Nicole. I'll move it, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
This is Clyde. I'll second, but with the possible addition that maybe we should discuss the web page suggestions that staff has presented.
Okay, well, now, the maker of the motion would be amenable. Why don't we amend it to add an item 6, discussion of the web page, and move adjournment to item 7.
That's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so there's a motion before us to adopt the agenda as amended, which would add item 6, the web page, and moving adjournment to item 7. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. First item on the agenda is board policy review and discussion. I'll turn that over to our executive director, Peter. If you'd like to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The members should have received a packet with 4 proposed policy concepts. Deputy Director and I worked through these together and drafted them back and forth and went through various iterations. TGA drafted the first 2 and did most of the research. I'd like to turn over the discussion to your Deputy Director at this point to just briefly review the first policy today, which is our public meeting and notice policy. And then answer any questions members may have and facilitate the discussion, and we'll move on down the list. So, Mr. Deputy Director, if you could just give us a brief overview for the public's sake of the thinking. And, oh, I see a hand from Melanie.
Go ahead, Melanie.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask that the policy be put up on the screen so that I'm not having to jump between 2 screens. So that could happen, please.
There we go. Thank you.
Oh, well done.
Okay, so this is TJ, Deputy Director, speaking.
We did draft this packet of a variety of different policies for your consideration, and we kind of determined that probably some of the most important ones would be public meeting records and compensation that would need to be discussed today. So going through the first one, we've got our public meeting and notice requirement policy. And this is essentially a policy that would determine how the board communicates to the public that it is having a meeting and that all of the things that go along with governmental bodies conducting government business in the public is well established and noticed into the job. So in this case, as is always the question with the redistricting board, a lot of times when we're adopting a policy, whether it relates to procurement, public meetings, open records, we look to the executive branch and we look to the legislative branch for guidance in terms of which policy we should adopt. In this case, the executive branch uses what's called the Open Meetings Act under AS 2462-310. And the definition is pretty broad, and it says it covers all meetings of a governmental body or public entity. And the definitions of governmental body and public entity are pretty broad, and they're listed there. Looking to, when speaking about public notice, it says public notice must be given in a reasonable time. There is no definition of that in the statute. The legislature's public meeting and notice requirement policy comes from the uniform rules, not from the statute. And so the uniform rules are rules 22 and 23. And so rule 22 pretty much just says that all meetings at the legislature are open to the public. So it's a pretty straightforward policy. And then rule 23 actually directs notice of committee practice. So this is where it gets a little bit dicey. In the legislature during session, you as a staff person or a chair of the committee must submit documentation to the secretary and the chief clerk on the Thursday before the week that the meeting is happening. That requirement goes away once the 24-hour rule kicks in. And the 24-hour rule kicks in either after the operating budget has the after conference committee or during the interim. So for the purpose of us, the question for us is whether we would be subject to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act or to the uniform rules of the legislature. For first consideration, it's pretty straightforward that we did discuss the definition of governmental body and public entity is quite broad. As opposed to the procurement code, and there's a paragraph that begins here, the procurement code is a little bit broader, and the procurement code, there are two different ones within the statute. One for that says this procurement code applies to executive branch agencies, and another code which applies to the legislative branch. In that case, we had a little bit of latitude to choose which one to adopt because the redistricting board is not an agency of the executive branch and is not a part of the legislative branch. So there was some wiggle room in terms of which one to adopt. In this case, because based on staff research and discussion, the definition of governmental body and public entity are really broad. And one can imagine that the statute is kind of written to capture essentially any work of any public entity whatsoever. So in this case, not only does the definition kind of guide our thinking in terms of adopting the Open Meetings Act, but further, it would also get really confusing if we were to consider ourselves, let's say, a committee of the legislature. It would be somewhat awkward for us to have to submit our notices to the chief clerk and the secretary by 4 p.m. the Thursday before. So this meeting would have, today's meeting would have been noticed last Thursday, but then that would change in the 24-hour rule kicks in. It probably would be more difficult for the public to track when our rules changed in tracking with the legislature anyway. So not only a matter of statutory guidance in terms of the definition, but also in terms of actual just ease of use for the public and for the board as well, is the staff recommendation to adopt the Open Meetings Act, AS 2462-310. And that action would direct the staff to ensure that the meeting is noticed, the location is noticed, the taxes are included with the notice, the teleconference options, is that that information would be posted to the Alaska Public Notice System website within a reasonable amount of time. We would also additionally make sure we put the notice on the legislative website in addition to the public notice system, the state public notice system. So that's the thinking behind the public notice policy proposal.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead, Melanie.
I'm not sure why TJ's audio is so muffled. Is there any way you can improve your sound, TJ? I got text from a member of the public saying you're barely audible on the legislative line.
Oh, wow. Really sorry.
You can find on my speaker, but
I can make sure that I speak a little into the mic a little bit more, but I'm happy to go over any other portion of the policy, the public meeting policy, that the board would like to go over again.
I don't feel like you need to. I just wanted to make sure that you understood that some people are having a hard time hearing you.
Yes. I will throw my voice to the mic a little bit more.
Any other questions specifically on the policy? I think you did a great job on this, TJ, and I thought it was well thought out. It makes good sense, and I think it's the route we ought to go. We'll try and pull these all together in a motion at the end of these presentations. But for now, if there's no other questions, let's move on to the second policy that you worked on, TJ, public records policy.
Okay. So this is TJ again, Deputy Director, speaking out to the public records policy proposal. Public records is obviously different from the public notice. The public notice is how we tell people that we are meeting and let the public know that we are doing work and complying with open, making sure that our meetings are public. In this case, the public records policy, we are making sure that the work that we do within the committee and during our actual map drawing and such is recorded and retained for not only posterity but for future. So in this case, we also look to the executive branch and to the legislative branch as well. And records of meetings of the executive branch in this case track again AS 4462-310. And it's pretty generalized in terms of saying that any vote by governmental or public body shall be conducted in such a manner that the public may know the vote of each person entitled to vote. The vote at a meeting held by teleconference shall be taken by roll call. So we discussed this last week that we are taking not only generalized minutes, but we're also recording motions, and we're making sure that motions and seconds to motions are being recorded, and we are working to procure a minute ticket as well to make sure that we formalize our process. Any further guidance as it relates to how a governmental body keeps records is really then becomes kind of specific to the agency itself. So, for example, ADA, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, their chapter in statute just says the authority shall keep minutes of each meeting and send a certified copy to the governor and legislative budget and audit committees. The Board of Regents and the University of Alaska and the Permanent Fund also have similar statutory direction as to how public records should be kept. Many of them revolve around this idea of keeping minutes and vote taking. Those are the things that kind of come through a really salient point. Looking to the legislature, again, the legislature abides by uniform rules. Rule 23 provides that the legislature shall record its meetings electronically and prepare minutes of each meeting of the committee on a standard form. So back to, once again, the existential question of the redistricting board is whether or not the board considers itself executive or legislative branch when applying the public records policy. In this case, there is no statutory guidance that exists for which code to adopt. So we kind of are going back to the procurement example code where the board could likely adopt either policy or a hybrid, one or the other policy, or a mix of the two. The staff recommendation in this case is to adopt a policy that includes recording, electronic recording, which we do, and maintaining electronic copies of the audio recording of each meeting and keeping notes that capture votes, motions, and brief statements of the position of board members. And the reason we went with this is that we thought a full transcribed version of every meeting. From our research, it looked like it took a really long time to turn around exact transcriptions in the last cycle, and that minutes do provide not only what the public needs for information, but also what the statute is requiring. So that is the thinking behind the public records policy.
Okay, thank you. Melanie, to follow up on your concern, I just had a text as well, somebody from the public that is having a difficult time with the audio, and it might not just be your microphone, TJ, on your computer, but it might be the way that we have the bridge set up, if that's a thing, that whenever it's going, we're on Teams where we're seeing each other on video, and the sound is fine, it seems like, between us, but for some reason it's not connecting them to the audio conferencing through Legislative Affairs. And Peter or TJ, I don't know if there's the way it's connected or what it is that's causing the problem, but is there something we can look at in the short term here to see if we can figure that out?
Well, I've been texting the legislative operator, and she indicates that most of the audio is coming through okay, but that TJ was coming through fairly muffled, so I'm checking again with her to see. She said that you're coming through loud and clear, so it seems like it's mostly TJ, and I think he's about wrapped up, so I'm not
sure. Yeah, I just want to give an overview to the board of what I think this really good for the public. Maybe that might be good as well.
Okay.
TJ and Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. No.
It seems like TJ's sound became a problem when he started screen sharing. I could hear him loud and clear before the screen share happened, but after he started sharing his screen, I could no longer hear him either as clearly. So maybe if he stops sharing his screen and we just have to go back and forth between two different windows, that might help. Also, that's why I raised my hand, so I'm going to take the emoji off, or whatever you call it.
TJ, why don't you do a test right now and see if that comes across any clearer?
Yeah, but stop screen sharing. How's that now?
It's not any better.
You know what? You might need to turn your camera off.
Yeah.
That improves the audio sometimes. Turn your camera off and now try to speak to us.
Okay. Cool, Melanie, how's that for you? I can hear him fine all the time, but is it any better for yours?
Can you say something, TJ?
Yep. Testing, how's that? Anything?
Okay, that sounds a little bit better. Earlier, you sounded like you're underwater.
Hmm.
Now it just sounds like you're in a cave.
As long as he's not underwater, in a cave.
I'll let Peter finish off those brief descriptions so that the public can make sure that they get the spirit of what we're saying, and I'll make call move around.
And it really is only just TJ that
Yeah, Peter, if you can just give a quick recap.
I'll just give a quick summary. I'll start at the top with the public meeting notice policy. The staff is recommending that the board adhere to the Alaska Open Meetings Law Act, which applies to all boards and commissions of the state of Alaska. This requires that we give reasonable notice for any meeting that's going to occur. Now, that's obviously how you define reasonable. In general, we're going to attempt to give at least 72 hours of notice, with 24-hour notice being allowable if circumstances would require that, and that is in line with what other boards and commissions are allowed to do. We've elected not to recommend the legislative meeting notices because that requirement changes as the stage of the legislative session progresses, and that's not something that really applies to the board and that the public may not even be aware of. So we're recommending that the board stick with the Alaska Open Meetings Law that applies generally to all government meetings. And then the public records policy, similarly, we could use the legislative form or the regular state of Alaska form. We're recommending that we maintain electronic recordings of all of our meetings and we make those available to the public. Those are currently available on the akledge.gov website, but once our website is up and going, we will have all the electronic minutes available there that we can get. It'll take a while to get them uploaded, but hopefully we'll have the entire library there in due course so that members could listen to any meetings that they wanted to. Furthermore, government agencies or boards are required to keep minutes, which track motions, who made a motion, who seconded it, and then take a tally of all votes so the public can look at a document to see who voted what on what question. We're also going to record the position of a board member on an issue. So if a board member states, I really feel that strongly about XYZ issue, then the minutes should reflect that as well. So in a nutshell, those are the recommendations we're making on these two policies. And if members are satisfied or don't have questions, we can move on to the third policy or we can try and answer questions on those policies.
Okay, thank you. Questions, we did do some, we went through questions on the first public meetings aspect. Questions on the public records policy for board members.
Mr. Chairman, this is Nicole.
Go ahead, Nicole.
I actually missed the window to ask a question about the public notice aspect of it. That's the only part here that I do have something that I would like to ask. Because before I even had trouble figuring out where we were noticing these meetings at. So is this going to be on the legislature's website or somehow tied to the governor's office?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So through the chair, Nicole, when we first started, for whatever reason, the legislature funded our board through the legislative budget process, and so we're sort of under the general umbrella of the legislative branch. Because of that, our meetings were initially noticed mostly on the legislative website. However, TJ and I have gained access to the state public notice system as well. So starting, I think, two meetings ago, we're noticing the meetings on both notice.alaska.gov, where all Alaska public notices are for every different type of meeting, and we're also posting them on the Alaska legislative website, akledge.gov. They're also posted there under the meetings tab, or if you go committees, joint committees, or districting boards, you can see all of our meetings along with the audio and the document download through there. So our goal is to post them to those two notice systems, both the administrative branch and the legislative branch. As was hinted at earlier in our meeting, we have our own website under development, and of course, once that has been published, we will also post meetings on our website and also have a sign-up form for anyone who would like to be notified of upcoming meetings. They can give us their email address, and we'll blast out an email when a meeting's scheduled. So you get a notification in your inbox that says, hey, there's a redistricting board meeting. It's this time and date, so that folks who are really interested in the topic can stay informed without having to go to a website to check every so often.
Okay, thank you, Peter. So really, three different areas that will be noticed, plus specific notice to people individually who are interested in receiving those notices. Any further questions? Next policy area is board member compensation policy. Peter?
Yes, thank you. So the Alaska Constitution, Article 6, Section 8A, is very clear. It simply states board members shall be compensated. There's no ifs, ands, or about it. It must happen. And the staff sort of sense was that in order for that to really pass muster, it would have to be compensated in a way that truly compensated the board members for the effort involved. Now, it's important to note that board members spend a lot of time on board matters that are not on the day of the meeting. So, for instance, just in this last week, we mailed out members hundreds of pages of legal memorandums from the last cycle, as well as the NCSL Red Book, which has case law and case studies from all across the country on redistricting issues. I don't know how fast members read, but it would take me a week to read through all that material. So the idea that members need to be compensated, it's traditionally been, as the boards are, done on a daily rate. But that daily rate also, in theory, should hopefully cover many of the hours that board members spend prepping for meetings and attending to the issues of redistricting, whether or not they're actually in a meeting. So that's part of the board member compensation policy. We did some research and found in 2010 the compensation rate was $400 a day. Inflation since then has been about 19%. If you just apply an inflationary factor to that, you get $477.20, which is our recommendation. We did some other research and found that legislators are compensated at $486. Railroad board members are also in the $400 range. So we feel like to be compensated, truly compensated, that rate, $477 seems to be right in the ballpark. We don't know how many meetings we're going to have. We may have very few leading up until when the census date arrives and then a whole bunch of them. It's impossible to predict on the total number of meetings that we have. But so far there have been, this is our eighth meeting, for example, and the board's been in place about 5 months. Are there any questions about the compensation?
Questions from board members?
This meeting is being recorded and or transcribed.
And I think that's in the queue also.
Thank you. So my employer, Twitter, allows employees to serve on boards and commissions with pay so long as there is no financial gain or loss. And we do have other employees serving on different boards and commissions. What our company policy is if there's going to be compensation, that it be redirected to our organization, basically kind of, you know, contributes back to the salary pot of money that is covering wages. And I don't gain financially or lose anything. And this way I also don't have to pay taxes on something. I can't just sign it over to Quirk because then it's taxable income to me and I will incur a financial loss. Is this something that we can accommodate? Otherwise, I'm going to have to take personal leave whenever we meet and then, I guess, accept this compensation to make up for the loss.
Maybe you can check with Lynch Legal. I guess would be maybe the entity to get some advice on that on.
Yeah, well, staff will reach out to Ledge Legal and Accounting in terms of handling this in the proper form and creating a document trail to document what we're doing and how it's working. I certainly understand the request and appreciate what you're trying to accomplish. So I believe it's possible, but, you know, we will have to consult with the experts and be sure that we can accommodate that for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melanie. Bethany, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure that my understanding is correct, and if so, suggest perhaps some clarifying language. The way that it reads now, it would seem like every day this compensation would be provided, and so I'm presuming this to mean that this is every day that there is a meeting being held, that there's a board meeting held. So if I could get some clarification on that, then if that's true, obviously we would need to change that language because as it reads now, it just says shall be compensated at a certain amount per day.
I think that's the intent, but we need to clarify that.
Yeah, no, the intention is per board meeting day. That's the way boards are traditionally compensated, and we'll certainly amend that policy to say $477.20 per board meeting day.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying that. I just wanted to make sure we have the right language there.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Bud, you've got your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, along the same lines, if we had a meeting that lasted 15 minutes or something just to, say, act on something that had already been discussed or a procedural thing, I think I wouldn't feel right about taking the full day per diem or meeting rate. I wonder if it would make sense to have a half rate or something if there's a meeting that's less than an hour long. Or I'm just throwing out possibilities. I haven't thought about it that much, but it, you know, I've dealt with other boards that have a different rate, you know, for a full-scale meeting as opposed to just kind of a quick get-together kind of thing. So just wondering if that's a possibility or what other people think about that.
I know in my experience, it's been on professional boards or boards of corporations and also of entities like the Alaska Railroad, for example. But many times it can be a short meeting. Sometimes the preparation for that meeting is lengthy. Sometimes the meetings are longer, but the preparation is less. There's a variety of different situations, and it's, I know with corporate meetings or corporate boards that I've served on, it, even if it was a short meeting to ratify something, a labor contract or whatever it might be, you still got full compensation. But I think in the end, it kind of all balanced out, and it's hard to try and quantify in a policy every aspect. You could go half-day meetings, full-day meetings, but I know the railroad, it's not that way, but in the end, it kind of balances out for the time you spend preparing. And sometimes there's no meeting. There's just a lot of reading and a lot of information that you have, or you're meeting with the public about something specific on an issue, and there's no recognition of that. So maybe what we can do is proceed on this manner, and if it doesn't make sense as we go along, I don't view these policies as being static. We can make adjustments or make amendments to the policies. Just my thoughts. Anybody else on that?
Melanie, I see your hand up.
No, I just forgot to take it down after my last question. How do I do that? There we go.
No problem.
But I see you still got your hand up, too, at least the little emoji at the bottom of the screen. Okay, there it's gone. Okay, any further questions, Nicole?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I read this part of the proposal, too, and I did have the same reaction that Bud did and concern. I don't know that any of us accepted the nomination to serve on this board with the intention of drawing down a meeting fee like this. So if we wanted to implement a sliding scale, I know for one of the boards that I serve on, for example, we do it based on the time that we're actually convened in the meeting. But then that doesn't take into consideration the point that you raised very eloquently, Mr. Chair, that sometimes a meeting can be very quick, but you spend hours preparing for it. So I just want to say that I do observe that this is, you know, when you look at it, a very high, I think, meeting fee, but it is in line with current state practice for other boards and commissions. And as long as we're committed to potentially revisiting it in the future, I would feel comfortable moving forward.
Okay, thank you. Other comments or thoughts? Okay, if not, Peter, do you want to move on to the next policy item, which is member and staff travel per diem policy?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Similarly to the previous points we discussed, the board has considerable discretion here as to what travel and per diem policy we would like to adopt. This is premised, of course, on COVID restrictions relaxing, and we are being able to travel and take, you know, trips to outlying communities that are being have districting questions. That is the ideal. The 2010 cycle, the board did numerous meetings in virtually every HUD community around the state. It's a core mission of the board, and we're currently hampered in that regard. But looking forward to COVID relaxation sometime in the coming months, it seemed appropriate to dig into what the options might be. The state of Alaska has a boards and commissions per diem table, which is linked from the board packet, if you've had a chance to look at that. There's also a legislative per diem rate. We looked at the Department of Defense per diem rate. Those were all options, and the board could choose any of those or any other standard that they decided to pursue. But speaking, you know, at the staff level, working back and forth, we felt like using the Alaska Boards and Commissions per diem table, the starting point, seemed to make the most sense. Specifically, that policy is actual room and actual lodging costs, $60 a day for meals. The state board and commissions doesn't make any provision for ground transportation or incidentals. And when we looked at the mission of what the redistricting board may be looking at, traveling out to distant communities where a rental car might cost $100 a day easily, and there'd be other incidental expenses for who knows what, we felt like an addendum to the board and commission policy, which just allowed for $25 for incidentals and up to $60 a day for ground transportation, for rental car, or in some cases you can't get a rental car, you have to use a taxi to get from place to place, that we would recommend actual lodging, $60 for meals, $25 for incidentals, and $60 per day for ground transportation, with the option that actual costs, so if a board member ended up somewhere and incurred additional costs, they could bring that to the board chair, and with his discretion, the board chair could authorize additional expenses that were, you know, not foreseeable and were in the course of furthering the board's mission. So that's the background to the policy. I think if you look at the Department of Defense, for example, they allow meals at $100 per day. That's probably a little more accurate for some communities by the time you include gratuities, but we felt like $60 was doable. And again, with the other policies, we can make adjustments as time goes on if we find out that members are incurring out-of-pocket expenses that seem to be, you know, a burden, then we can revisit this policy and make adjustments. And, of course, in any one case or multiple cases, board chair could authorize additional expenses that were actually incurred.
Questions from board members on this policy?
Mr. Chair, this is Melanie.
Yeah, Melanie, go ahead, please.
Peter, so it says amendments to include up to $25 for incidentals. Is that something that, since it says up to 25, that we would require, you'd want receipts for, or is that going to just be added to the $60? So it would be like $85 a day. Or is it $60 for your meals? You don't have to provide receipts, and then if you have incidentals, provide receipts. I'm confused.
Yeah. So traditionally, at least with the legislative branch I'm familiar with, you can do either way. You can submit receipts for actuals if you want, or if you just fill out a form. I was gone these days, and I, you know, was gone for two meals on Saturday and three meals on Sunday. Then you could be compensated just at that rate, 60 and 25, if you so chose. You know, at the staff level, I submit receipts because I usually don't spend that much, but whatever's most convenient. It could go either way, but the idea is it would be capped at 60 and capped at 25. So if you even submitted receipts for more, you would still be paid 60 for meals and 25 for any incidental.
Okay. Nicole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you also, Peter and TJ, for all of this great work and figures that you were able to run down. I'm wondering, all of this sounds good to me, except for maybe the part that seems like it might be a bit tight is the actual meal, $60 a day. I think you'd be hard-pressed to be able to eat within that budget, even in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau, you know, any one of those locations. And I was wondering if we might want to consider as a board raising it to at least 75, or if everyone feels comfortable leaving it at 60.
Any thoughts from board members? You know, I tend to agree with you, Nicole, that 60 does seem tight if you're eating three meals in Anchorage or Juneau or Fairbanks would be a little bit tight, depending on what your preference was. But if you're at a hotel and you needed a hotel, it probably would exceed that. Either way is fine with me. Other board members, Melanie, do you have your hand still up, or is that a new question or thought?
I forgot to put it down again.
Oh, okay, but your emoji up there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What if we? I agree with Nicole's point, but what if we took? But I don't really understand what incidentals go into the $25. So what if we merged the 60 and the 25, made it a single allocation for meals and incidentals, and called it good?
I think I'm a little confused on that too, Peter. I don't really know what incidentals are.
Well, it's just intended to encapsulate any additional expense that was incurred. For example, the board in the past traveled with a large quantity of printed maps, and these were apparently fairly cumbersome to handle, and they would end up, you know, having to get a sky cap or something just to get them on the plane, and, you know, just had incidental expenses that were related to the board mission but didn't really neatly fall under a meal or accommodation. So that's what incidental was intended for. But staff is certainly willing and able to just do a merged $85 per day, and in many ways that's simpler. So as the board prefers.
Nicole? Oh, and Bethany, sorry, I see your hand is up also. Bethany, why don't I let you go ahead first and then Nicole's.
I am comfortable with Bud's recommendation. I was going to say I didn't think that it would be appropriate for us to raise our meals for more than what the legislative meals are. What's looking at, I'm sorry, not the legislative, I guess it's executive branch that has the $60 per diem rates. But if we were to merge that with the incidentals, I would be comfortable with that. But if we don't, I would not really be all that comfortable with going above 60 simply because that's what the executive branch is held to, at least according to the documents that we were sent, correct?
Okay, I think that's it, right? Correct, Peter?
Yeah, that's what the Board of Commission's current per diem policy is, 60 for meals, correct?
Okay, Nicole?
I really like Bud's suggestion, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to go ahead and suggest that we adopt it and just merge those as an MIE together at 85 capped a day. And anything over that requires a receipt for reimbursement and is subject to the approval and discretion of the chair.
Okay, that's reasonable to me. Any other thoughts on that item? Okay, let's go then to item 5 on the agenda, which is adoption of one or more of these board policies. And I would entertain a motion to adopt all of these policies with those two specific changes that I believe we came up with. One was in board member compensation policy to insert the language that this would apply to board meetings. And I would suggest that we also maybe add hearings, board hearings to that. Sometimes we won't have official meetings, but board members will be out in the community conducting public hearings. At least that was seemed to be the route that the last redistricting board went through, where they sent two members at a time and not to communities to conduct hearings. So I would just say to include board meetings and or hearings in that. And then the second change was on the per diem policy of including meals and incidentals together. And then, Nicole, I think you had the language on that, the MIE total of $85 per day. And I'm not sure what MIE stands for, but I think you have the seemed to understand that.
Mr. Chairman, it's meals and incidental expenses. It's just what the federal per diem abbreviation is. But the other part of that is that any actual expenses would be turned in and subject to approval at the discretion of the chair for an expenditure for MIE over 85.
Okay. Okay. And Melanie, I see you have your hand up there.
Yes, for real this time. I'm wondering if 4C member compensation policy needs to be something that we hold off on approving until Peter or TJ gets direction from Ledge Legal or whoever regarding my request that my compensation be provided to Quirk and not directly to me as a reimbursement for my wages.
Yeah, I wonder if that would change the whole policy then, or if that would just be within that policy a way to accommodate whatever the particulars are of Caloric and your relationship in that. I'm just going to look, read it through and see if it would. It doesn't seem to be in this language if we adopted this that it would preclude that from happening. And as I said, these policies, I don't see them in this stack if you want to make changes or amendments. And it might even need a specific amendment for that going forward, Melanie. But I would say it's at least so that the staff can get on with complying with the Constitution that we adopt the policy as is and then make an amendment if it's necessary.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other thoughts? If not, we'd look for a motion to adopt those policies with the aforementioned changes to the two policies.
Stephanie, so moved.
This is Nicole. I'll second it.
Okay, motion before us and seconded to adopt those four policies with the two changes noted. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is adopted. Next item on the agenda is the discussion of a web page. Peter or TJ, you want to give us a rundown of where we're at with our web page?
Sure. So Deputy Director and I conducted a fairly extensive whiteboarding session and tried to identify all the issues facing the board and the staff in the coming months. And having a website, a web presence out so the public can begin to learn more about the process and keep up on meetings was right near the top. So right after RFI for Legal Counsel, the website was next in line. So members have received a couple of initial mock-ups in terms of a design. There's been some feedback, and I would please request any additional feedback hopefully today or early tomorrow if you can so that we can continue to make progress on deploying the website. I don't have a firm date for the launch, but I'm certainly hoping to have something up in the next 10 to 14 days. And then at that point, we'll be able to sign up members for the public and get some of that initial stuff out of the way. Of course, we will also post the existing districts, the 2013 proclamation plan that will kind of test run our map publishing system. I'm calling it the map gallery with those 40 districts. I'm in conversation with Fred from CityGate about how their software is going to export those maps and how we can have the staff easily put those up on the web so that members of the public will have ready access to our maps as they're adopted for planning purposes, drafting purposes, and so forth. So obviously the website will serve as the single point of access for maps for Alaskans, and so that functionality is really core to the website, and I'm putting a lot of effort into making sure that that'll work as seamlessly as possible. So that's where we are with the website. For members of the public, I can post some of the mock-up samples we have just so the public can see what we're considering, that the board members have seen. And those, of course, are still subject to additional modification and tweaking as we move forward.
Good. I think it's well done, at least the outline that I've seen so far, that board members have seen, and I appreciate you getting it out to the public, too, so that we can get comment. That's the point of it, really, is to make it easy to navigate for the public and to make certain that they have the information that we have real time as quick as they can. So excited to have it up and in place and also to get input back from the public as well. Any other comments, thoughts, input on the web design from board members?
Looks good.
Okay, good. Bud?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the staff for going to the effort of putting that together. to give us something to work from. I like the idea of using the antique map as sort of the background as a collector of antique maps. I thought it was right on.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Voters, members of the public will see that we have an old map from 1867 used as sort of the main graphic. And in addition to being kind of interesting from a historical point of view, it also is nice because it doesn't overemphasize urban communities versus rural communities presently. A current map will always show the big cities in big lettering and then not even show some smaller communities, and that does not accurately reflect the priorities of the board or how we want them, how we see the state. So an older map was chosen because it avoids that problem.
Great.
I just want to thank Peter and TJ. Actually, Peter, I think you were the one that made those changes that I asked for very quickly the other day. Thank you.
No problem. Good catch.
Yes, thank you for that input, Melanie. This doesn't really require any action, just the information and status both for the public and the board. The only other item we have is adjournment. Is there any other business that board members want to bring up before we entertain a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Chair,
I don't see
Bethany?
Any. Oh, Bethany, please. Oh, yeah, I see your emoji now. Sorry.
No problem. Thank you. I just wanted to, in the same vein as the outreach to the public, we emailed about this a little bit, but I just wanted to make sure we consider prioritizing meeting with various groups and organizations about what redistricting is and what the process will entail. I've had several groups reach out to me, and once we get the census data, those are not the kind of meetings we're going to be having. We're going to be busy, and we're going to be talking about the actual maps. But I think it's a good time now for us to start educating the public on who we are and what we do so that they can then follow the process once everything kicks off. So I would just ask that we consider prioritizing our policy on that kind of outreach as one of our next steps.
Great point.
Well, thank you. I've made a note of that.
Further comments?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to update you too on Nome's travel rules. When we first started having our meetings, I had mentioned that travel would be difficult for me because it would require a 7-day mandatory quarantine when I returned to Nome. That has been lifted for those who have received both of their vaccination shots. Now I would just have to submit to a COVID test and be negative, so it's easing up a little bit. I have had both of my shots, so I'm actually next week, I think I'll be 2 weeks post, so I'll be able to travel a little bit more than I have.
Wow, that's great, Melanie. That's very exciting. Do you have any sense on, in terms of Nome and how percentage-wise they're doing with vaccinations there?
The whole region itself, I think they've said that they've vaccinated, I can't remember if it was 2,500 or 3,500 people already. So we're, right now it's opened up to anyone 16 and older here in Nome and the villages. So I'm really glad that it's, more available, it seems like, in rural areas than Anchorage.
Well, great. Well, maybe it won't be just you traveling in. We'll get a chance to all travel out to Nome too.
That would be great. I would love to host you all here.
Excellent. With that, if there's no other comments, we'd entertain a motion for adjournment.
This is Nicole. So moved, Mr. Chair. Good job as usual.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Bud. Motion before us to adjourn. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. See you.
Take care.